ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. It's Wednesday, the 13th of March. I'm David Lipson, coming to you from Gadigal Land in Sydney. There's been another bungle by the Department of Home Affairs in relation to almost 150 immigration detainees set free after a High Court ruling last year. Several men who've been arrested again for breaching their visa conditions could be released after it was revealed the government issued them with invalid visas. Andrew Giles is the Immigration Minister and joined me earlier. Minister, thanks for being with us. What went wrong?
Thanks, David. Look, in managing that group of people the High Court required to be released late last year, the department became aware in recent days of a technical issue with the visas that affected this group of people. Now, this is an issue that actually dates back more than a decade to the creation of the visa class back in 2013. This issue's been identified and has now been resolved with incredible efficiency. We, in dealing with this issue, are always guided by what's best to keep communities safe and also by adherence to the law. And I want to reassure your listeners and the entire Australian community that there's been no lapse in the constant monitoring of this cohort as a result of this technical issue. And I reiterate that we've now resolved it. And I want to express, of course, my appreciation of and gratitude for all the law enforcement authorities that have been working so hard to keep communities safe.
So some of these detainees or ex-detainees who were released after that High Court ruling but then arrested again are going to be released. How many and what can you tell us about them?
Well, this, of course, will only affect the issues that relate to breaches of the visa, not any offences committed under state and territory laws. That's a really important point.
Right. So, for example, there was one I can remember who faced two counts of indecent assault. Those sorts of charges won't be dropped.
Well, I should be very careful in saying this. Obviously, any matter relating to the laying of charges or going to a prosecution is a matter for the relevant law enforcement body, not a matter for government. But it is the case that these visa issues only relate to the visa conditions and breaches relating from them.
When did you find out about this?
Only in the last couple of days.
Right. So there were some reports that the department was aware of this in December. They're not correct?
No, they're not correct.
Okay. Will this have any impact on the monitoring of the entire cohort of detainees going forward?
No, there has been no changes to the monitoring arrangements. As I've said consistently, and indeed as senior officials of the Federal Police said in Senate estimates only weeks ago, these are people who are being constantly monitored. We know where they are, and all of these visas have been reissued.
So the visas have been reissued already. Was that able to be done just with the stroke of a pen, if you like, or do these ex-detainees have to sort of come in, be rounded up again to be processed?
No, they don't need to be rounded up. The decision can be made by the delegate without that happening, and that has happened in respect of all of those affected. Visas have been reissued with appropriately strict conditions, and again, there has been no change to the strict monitoring arrangements for every one of these people.
So who do you blame for this?
Well, this is not a question about blame. This is a question about dealing with problems as they arise and doing everything possible, working with our law enforcement authorities and bodies like the Community Protection Board to ensure at every step our focus is on community safety. This is not a question about blame. It's a question of looking to resolve problems.
But would you have preferred that the 10 or so that were arrested for breaches of their visa conditions, that's the sort of monitoring that was put in place to keep the community safe, would you prefer that they were still under lock and key?
Well, we want to have the strongest possible framework in place to deal with community protection in response to the High Court decision. Now, we've got to do that in accordance with the law and to make sure that we are doing everything possible to equip our law enforcement authorities to do their job. That's what this is about. That's what everything that I have done through this journey has been about.
And what is the number that are going to be released?
Well, no one's being released as a result of this, David. Mm. This relates to a group of people that were released because of the High Court decision. It goes to their visa conditions. And as I say, every one of those visas where there was an issue that goes back to an issue that relates to 2013 decision-making has now been re-granted with appropriate and strict conditions.
I'm sorry, because there was reporting again overnight that some of those who had been rearrested for breaches of conditions will be released.
I now understand the question that you're making. So the issue here, again, goes back to the question about the responsibility of the Commonwealth Director of Public Prosecutions and indeed state prosecution bodies.
But how many?
That is a matter for them. The issue here, it goes to the nature of the charges that might be laid that relate to issues solely of questions that relate to breaches of visa conditions. But again, these are matters for the appropriate prosecutorial bodies.
Okay. I'm not sure entirely what that means. But look, your critics have been calling for you to resign for months already. Are you going anywhere?
No, I'm focused on doing my job, on making sure that we keep in place a regime that keeps Australians safe in adherence with the law.
Minister Andrew Giles, thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much, David.
And Andrew Giles is the Immigration Minister. The federal government's been offered a chance to get its new vehicle efficiency standards through Parliament, but it comes with a catch. The Greens say they'll support the legislation if Labor dumps proposed changes to the way offshore gas projects are approved. But accepting the proposition could scuttle opposition support for other important legislation. Political reporter Evelyn Manfield explains.
The federal government's vehicle efficiency standards, or as the opposition calls it,
Mr Albanese's car and ute tax,
has become a bit of political football. The new standards aim to get Australian car makers to increasingly sell more electric and low emissions vehicles from next year by fining them if they don't. The coalition has expressed concerns, but the Greens are coming round to it.
We are prepared to pass Labor's legislation and pass it quickly. But we want to know that the good work being done by the legislation as people switch to electric vehicles won't be then undone tomorrow when Labor passes another bill with the coalition that opens up a new gas project that completely wipes out all the climate gains.
Greens leader Adam Bandt says even though the policy isn't as green as he'd like, his party is offering support, but only if the government withdraws part of an amendment to offshore gas legislation.
We will pass the electric vehicle legislation tomorrow because then we will know that all the climate gains that are made from people switching to electric cars won't be wiped out when Labor approves a massive new gas project.
The amendment focuses on worker protections in offshore oil and gas projects, but the Greens are worried it'll fast-track gas projects without proper environmental protections. The government could need the Greens' support for its vehicle efficiency standards since the coalition has raised concerns, including that it could push up the price of popular cars by thousands of dollars. Managing Director of the Australian Automobile Association, Michael Bradley, says making certain cars more costly is the point.
The whole point of this scheme is to make efficient cars cheaper than they otherwise would have been. The flip side of that is the whole point of this scheme is to make dirtier cars more expensive than they would have otherwise been.
But he wants the government to be more transparent about exactly how it'll change vehicle choices and prices.
The government has spent $750,000 modelling the impact of its proposed approach, but it's not putting that in the public domain. And we really think we need a evidence-based conversation about this. We're fearful that voters won't support what they can't understand, and we want to also understand what the government is proposing and who the winners and losers are. What we want to avoid is a situation whereby, because the target is so stringent, certain car makers or car dealers simply continue to sell the cars they currently do, pay a fine, and just pass that fine on to consumers, which would be a lose-lose situation.
The ABC contacted the Minister for Climate Change, Chris Bowen's office, for a response.
Evelyn Manfield there. There's been a surge in the use of illicit drugs, according to new analysis of our wastewater. Australians consumed more than 16 tonnes of methamphetamine, cocaine, heroin and MDMA in the year to August last year, an increase of almost 20%. Addiction treatment professionals say it should be a trigger for better policies. Here's Alison Schau.
Jack Nagle spent many of his teenage years hooked on illicit drugs, particularly methamphetamine.
That progressively got worse over time, not so much in terms of the amount that I was using, but just like the harms that I was experiencing from it. So, you know, my mental health getting worse, my financial position, and my relationships with family and friends.
The 33-year-old has been sober for several years, and now as the founder of Real Drug Talk, he helps others recover from addiction and can see what's really happening on the front line of Australia's illicit drug market.
What I hear from people all the time is that they don't feel comfortable talking to a GP about their methamphetamine use. And then it gets to a point where it's really, really bad.
New analysis of Australia's wastewater shows people consumed more than 10.5 tonnes of methamphetamine in the year to August 2023, a 17% increase compared to the previous year. The analysis was done by the Australian Criminal Intelligence Commission.
What we think has happened is that the last impacts of the COVID period have been removed from Australia's illicit drug market.
Shane Nielsen is the principal advisor on drugs at the ACIC.
So now it's getting back to a normal setting and hence the increases.
He says the increase of drug use to pre-COVID levels is concerning, with billions of dollars being spent in the illegal drug market.
Consumers of the four major drugs have spent $12.4 billion in the year to August 2023, and 85% of that expenditure was on methamphetamine, roughly $10.5 billion. So that's a lot of money, which is really just lining the pockets of organised crime groups at a time when, people are facing budgetary pressures at home.
The new data from the ACIC also found Australians consumed a little more than 4 tonnes of cocaine in the same period, up 19% from the previous year. But experts say it's important to note the limitations of data like this. Stephanie Kershaw is a research fellow at the Matilda Centre for Research in Mental Health and Substance Use.
What the wastewater reports tell us is how much of a drug is being used at a community level, so the quantity, but what it doesn't tell us is how many people are using the drug. So the prevalence is still unknown. It could be a large number of people using just a little bit of the drug, or it could be a small number of people using a lot of the drug. It's really hard to tell from that wastewater data the number of people who are using it. It also doesn't tell us anything about the harms or the patterns of use, so if people are starting to use more frequently or how they're using, whether it's injecting or smoking.
Jack Nagle says while data is important, more policy interventions are needed.
It would be changing the way that we talk about methamphetamine and other drugs on the wider spectrum in society so that we can reduce stigma and discrimination for people and allow people to get help at a point earlier rather than later.
He believes moral panic in the community about drug usage makes it harder for those struggling to reach out for help.
Alison Shaw and Leonie Thorne reporting there. Could the supermarket duopoly be contributing to food waste? That will be one of the questions raised today as a Senate Committee on Supermarket Prices holds hearings in Melbourne. And as Nathan Morris reports, grower groups say a power imbalance between farmers and big grocery chains is causing an oversupply of fresh food.
Australian farmers grow a lot of fruit and vegetables each year, but up to 25% of them never leave the farm. According to government-funded research body Food Innovation Australia, almost 1.7 million tonnes of produce is wasted each year.
It's incredibly significant. Yes, we're wasting food, but there's also other resources that we're wasting as well.
Associate Professor Bree Hurst is a corporate social responsibility expert at the Queensland University of Technology.
So you think about the land use, you think about the water that goes in to produce those vegetables and fruit, even chemical use, so fertiliser use.
Dr. Hurst has been reading through submissions from the Senate Select Committee on supermarket prices, which today we'll hear from peak vegetable grower group AusVeg. In its written submission, AusVeg alleges that non-binding and forecast supply agreements between farmers and retailers are resulting in an oversupply and lower farm gate prices.
A significant percentage of growers have shared that the full forecast volume in supply agreements is rarely ordered by retailers and sometimes as little as 50%.
AM has contacted a number of farmers, but none have agreed to speak due to concerns about how it might impact their business. A Woolworths spokesperson says it is important growers raise any concerns, and they can, quote, absolutely do so without fear of negative consequences. In a statement, a Coles spokesperson said,
"We work very closely with our growers to determine the approximate quantities of produce we expect to purchase ahead of time so we can give customers confidence that they will be able to buy in-season produce at great prices. It also gives growers the confidence to grow crops with certainty they will be able to meet demand while not creating an oversupply."
Academic Dr. Bree Hurst explains the tension between retailers and growers.
It's a lack of bargaining power. So when you have very few channels to sell your produce, you're really reliant on the supermarkets.
Another reason why good food is going to waste, according to AusVeg, is the supermarket's strict specifications for fruit and vegetables grown under variable climatic conditions. In its submission, it said rejected food cost farmers about $30 million a year.
Growers also feel that many of these rejections are not due to quality or failure to meet specifications, but rather because the retailer has overestimated the amount of produce they require.
Woolworths says its specifications ensures customers can buy fresh fruit and vegetables that will last, and that they are routinely varied to suit seasonal conditions. A spokesperson for Coles had a similar response.
"We assess all produce for eating quality, ripeness, pest damage, appearance, and expected customer home shelf life, and are deeply committed to balancing this with reducing food waste."
The Senate Select Committee on Supermarket Prices is due to report in May.
Nathan Morris there. Controversial social media influencer Andrew Tate and his brother Tristan are set for extradition to the UK over new offences. The internet personalities, who reject all charges, were arrested by Romanian police on Monday night over alleged sexual offences in Britain. But authorities in Bucharest have postponed deportation until their Romanian trial on separate charges concludes. Europe correspondent Catherine Diss reports from London.
Flanked by officers, Andrew Tate and his brother Tristan are led handcuffed from the back of a police van and into a Romanian court.
Andrew, are you ready to go back to London?
Why do you think they reopened the case?
Detained by Romanian authorities for 24 hours, the men were facing an extradition order issued by British police over fresh allegations of sexual aggression between 2012 and 2015. The warrant was issued by the Westminster Magistrates Court. Andrew and Tristan Tate's lawyer Eugene Vidinek spoke outside court.
As far as we know, this investigation was already closed. We don't know if this investigation is reopened, if there is any new evidence submitted by the authorities. There are only legal suppositions.
Social media influencer Andrew Tate gained millions of fans online by promoting an ultra-masculine lifestyle. He was indicted in Romania last year, along with his brother Tristan and two local women, for human trafficking, rape, and forming a criminal gang to sexually exploit women. They deny all of the charges. Andrew Tate spoke outside court.
We are innocent men. No, we're very innocent men, and in time everybody's going to see that, and we're very excited to finish this judicial process and clear our names.
Investigative reporter and author Matt Shea has published two documentaries and written a book about the Tate brothers.
This is what appears to be a totally new allegation or set of allegations that has led to the first UK arrest warrant around the Tate brothers. The reason that the authorities chose to pursue this UK arrest warrant today is, at least according to the lawyers of four women involved in the civil case against Andrew Tate, because there was a rumour he was going to flee the country.
The pair has been released from custody but will remain under judicial control in Romania, which prevents them from travelling outside the country. A decision on when the local trial can start is yet to be decided, with Romanian courts backlogged. This is Catherine Diss in London, reporting for AM.
And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm David Lipson.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. It may have passed you by, but right now, the big news publishers in Australia are in an almighty standoff with the tech giant Meta. Meta runs Facebook and has decided its users don't care for news content anymore. Today, when social media dumps news, is it game over for journalism? Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.